I've got my lucky jacket on tonight that we wore in the air. I know you guys appreciate the touch. At 5 o'clock on the evening, and by the way, this is the third night in a row I call it the extended MAGA holiday, right? I'll talk about Veterans Day in a little while, what it means, particularly for this institution. But these are 3 days I was in Macomb County, Michigan, the heart of Reagan Democrats. Macomb County that gave us that great victory in Michigan. Yeah. Donald Trump won overwhelmingly working class voters. Yeah. Last night in New Hampshire, at the place that the Trump campaign really kicked off in April of 2014, when he really first cattle called, when he was up there standing up against guys who've been planning on running for president for a long time. And then tonight, incredibly honored to be here on Veterans Day weekend at the Patriots Dinner, an honor that the Republican Society, the Citadel, invited me. If you've ever been to CPAC, an urban conservative, particularly grassroots conservative, you go, you can't miss the Corps cadets and how they open with bringing in the flag, all the ceremonies. It's a great honor. It's incredible. So squared away. At 5 o'clock on the 8th, I'll take you back a year, Jared Kushner and I were on the, in what we call the crack den, which was this beat up place on the 6th floor where we had this data center. No heat, no paint, no chip floor. And we got the first of the, we got the first exit polls, okay, from the opposition party, right? The exit polls had us even in Iowa, I think even in Ohio, and getting blown out in every other city, right? Jared had the good common sense to call, I think it was Matt Drudge, called Drudge, and Drudge said, just call for me, don't pay attention to it, right? They're wrong. At 9:15 at night, the Detroit Free Press called the state of Michigan for Hillary Clinton. Our analysis and our data center was very rudimentary, as most of the Trump campaign was. But we were feeling very good about Michigan, but they called it, right, on their model. At 10:36, the Associated Press called Ohio for Donald J. Trump. At 10:50, Associated Press called Florida for Donald J. Trump. At 11:11, AP called the great state of North Carolina for Donald J. Trump. At 12:02 a.m. on the morning of the 9th, the Associated Press called Iowa for Donald J. Trump. And at 12:15 in the morning, what, 13 minutes later, the Detroit Free Press. God bless them. Reversed their call. It was at that moment on our models that we knew Donald J. Trump was going to be president-elect of the United States. And why had the opposition party, why had the corporate media gotten it wrong? Their algorithms were right for what they thought the makeup of the voters were going to be. They hadn't thought of Macomb County. They hadn't thought of Western Michigan. They hadn't thought of places all over this country with working-class people. People, the backbone of this country, that finally came out and had not come out since Ronald Reagan to vote for a Republican candidate. At 1:35, the Associated Press called Pennsylvania for Donald J. Trump. The graveyard of Republican campaigns, and we were told for day one, no Republican could win. At 12:29 a.m., Associated Press called Wisconsin. And 60 seconds later, the Associated Press called the entire election for Donald J. Trump. We had a deal. We had a deal with the Clinton campaign. When I say we had a deal, they sent over some snarky email 5 weeks before. That genius Robbie Mook every day. You know, all those geniuses on the Clinton campaign. Somebody asked me the other day on the reminiscences of the 8th, did I listen to her concessions, but you know I couldn't listen to it. So I had to listen to all those speeches you made in campaign. I didn't want to be lost. I'm not going to listen to another one. You know, all those guys, all the men and women on the mainstream media, you know, they're crying that night. They're pulling their hair out. You know, because the day before, they, you know, we're going to get crushed in the Morning Joe, all the genius of the Morning Joe. And then when they got those exit polls, man, they were dancing around and high-fiving. By the way, at 5, Hillary did. Here's what they said. They sent an email. It said 15 minutes after AP calls it. We'll call, if it calls it for you, we'll call with a concession that you can go up. If not, we'll send it 15 minutes, but we're going to walk up and give us a victory speech. Because they thought that since President Trump was closing with the rigged system, they didn't think that we might not see. At 5:31 on the 24th, or the 23rd of November, the Detroit Free Press called Michigan for Donald Trump. And last night I made a headline in New Hampshire. New Hampshire's vote's all rigged. Trump won New Hampshire, no doubt about it. Right? I had the 6,000 people drive up that day with out-state license, driver's license registered on the day. Only 1,000 of them got cars registered there now. It's a total joke. Chris Kovacs and those guys and the guys in the Voter Integrity Committee, don't say that, make sure you just have to blow up. So look, we won 306. Two faithless electors decided not to vote for Trump. That was sweet. But it's 306 in my book. Four more, 310. The important question is, how did we do it, and what does it mean? Okay, so when I came in CEO on the 13th, after a New York Times story said the campaign was falling apart and all this bad stuff, and Maggie Haberman and the New York Times wanted to do it, President Trump, I think, was roughly 12 to 16 down, double digits down just about every battleground state. I think it was like 70 on the generic ballot. You got to be, I think it's 90. 9 out of 10 registered Republicans have to vote for him to become president. I think he had 70 or something, some low number. Historically low, they told me. And the reason was a lot of Republicans didn't think he was a Republican, right? So how do we do it? In 85 days, how do we do this? It's real simple. It's called unity. It's called a coalition, right? The only thing I told the president when I took the job, I said, look, it's real simple. Forget all these polls, they're not relevant. Totally irrelevant. So the only couple of numbers are relevant, and my good friend Pat Cadell, sitting right here, a Charleston resident. One of the great political thinkers around, even though he's a Democrat. Although they probably want you less than the Republicans. The two numbers Pat always said is the most important was right track, wrong track. Two-thirds of the country thought we're on the wrong track, one-third the right track. And 75% of the American citizens thought our country was in decline. I said, that's it right there. It's a whole campaign. You're going to paint her. We're just going to focus. Real simple. She's the tribune, the standard bearer for a corrupt and incompetent elite. And you are the tribune for change. An agent of change, right? All we have to do is give people permission to vote for you as an agent of change. And we're going to run the tables on them. He said, "What?" He said, "How do you, you know, what's your odds of winning this thing?" I said, 100% metaphysical certitude. Right? On that Monday, right, after Brother Manafort and some other folks had left, a group of beauties. My buddy Corey was with me last night in New Hampshire, so we had Corey up to the thing. Corey's a good man. Corey up to the convention, then the interregnum, as we call it, and then the mid-August shift. But with 85 days to go, first call I made was to Reince Priebus and the folks at the RNC. I'd only met Reince once for a couple of minutes at the Breitbart Embassy in Capitol Hill to shake his hand during a Tea Party thing. I said, Reince, I don't know you very well, except what I read on the pages of Breitbart where we light you up every day. I said, but you got to get on the train and get up here. You got to bring Katie Walsh and Sean Spicer and your whole team. I need op research. I need, you know, rapid response. We got to get it all. We got to go. It was a coalition. You know, I'm a popular. listen, I'm an economic nationalist, and I'm proud of it, all right? And we were all going in with libertarians and limited government conservatives and establishment folks, okay? Because God bless President Bush 41, and I have tremendous respect for him as a man, as a person who served in World War II, as a politician. But I got to tell you, it does not set well with me when you say it's better to vote for Hillary Clinton than Donald J. Trump. It's just totally, you can't defend that. It's totally different. We disagree on a lot, right? A lot of people in this room, we disagree, and sometimes we disagree on important things. But on the fundamentals, on the general direction, we agreed. It was that coalition, and we have to continue to remember that. It was that coalition that won the single greatest come-from-behind victory in American political history. We had the greatest candidate. We had the best message, right? They raised, I think, $2.2 billion. I think we raised $500-600 million. We had no TV ads up. But what we had was the understanding that we had what in the digital age is the most important thing. We had a candidate with total authenticity versus a complete phony. She just wrote another 900-page book, right? Didn't she just write a 900-page book? And by the way, this is just a way to compensate. Why don't the publishing companies, big media companies, just write her a big check and say, don't write any more books. Just give her another $10 million. And what was it? I think it was what happened. What happened? Ma'am, with all due respect, and I really mean this, what happened? You got your ass kicked. I was just kidding. Just some humor. It was a coalition, right? We had a great candidate, a great message, but it took everybody pulling together. We had the Right to Life people out there. We had the Tea Party patriots, all the Tea Party groups, right? We had the Catholic vote guys, the value voters, the family research council, everybody could go ring a doorbell. The cadets in this place set them up in Virginia, they ring a doorbell, that's how you win. You have candidates with authenticity, big actionable ideas, and an empowered grassroots that go door to door, because in the digital age, it's not the commercials. You know what it is? It's somebody ringing a doorbell with passion and understanding of who you are as a candidate. You know, at Goldman Sachs, I told you, don't bet anything, just perfect what's out there, right? You know what we're just perfecting? It's what David Axelrod, Barack Obama ran in 2008. That was a very smart campaign. He ran as a populist. He ran as a guy with no experience that, you know, was a benefit. And they had empowered grassroots in high technology. That's what won the Trump campaign in 2016. And it's what can win going forward. Now, here's one of the problems. After we won with the coalition, we get to Washington, D.C., we have not learned how to govern as a coalition, right? The Republican establishment and the donors, most of whom are never Trumpers, right? I hate to bring up such a brutal fact. You detest God, but let me tell you something, you're never Trumpers, okay? The Republican Party had 16 men and women, and by the way, the finest, I think, field in the history of the Republican Party. The quality of those folks, Dr. Ben Carson, Rand Paul, Governor Chris Christie, Jeff Bush, Marco Rubio, Carly Fiorina, just go on and on, 16 people. And these were quality folks, right? Trump cut through that as a Sith through grass. On a handful of issues, right? Illegal immigration being one of them. Bringing jobs back to this country. Not the kind of thing you heard all the time from the Republican establishment. But what resonated, and you can tell in those massive rallies, resonated with working men and women throughout this country. Right? That's what won. It was Trump's message and how he connected and connected to working class people. And by the way, as good and solid and decent as all those folks were, and as good as the Republican Party was to build those up over many, many years, and all the public service they had done, there's not one of those people that could have beaten the Clinton machine and Hillary Clinton. I can tell you, being the CEO of the campaign, right? We won at 2:30 in the morning. Hillary Clinton made that call. Next morning, I went in, I think it was like 7, 8 o'clock. And I can tell you, it was a hand of divine providence that won that. It was island misfit toys, okay? Trump looked at me that morning, I had this bomber jacket on, I hadn't shaved in a week, I had my hair down to here, greasing. I don't think I'd bathed in 3 days. And I'm his CEO. They talk about mainstream media, Anderson Cooper's head's blown up, they're talking about, you know, Russian collusion, they got Russian. We couldn't collude between the RNC and the Trump. Agenda. By the way, it's a tough agenda, right? Yeah. Just two very important things happened in the last 10 days, right? Yeah. President Xi of China gave a 3.5-hour speech. And if you haven't read that speech, 68 pages long, when you get home tonight, get on the internet, because you better read it. You better read it. Because your kids and your grandkids are going to live with it. Okay? President Xi, not a lot of jokes, right? He basically says that the Confucian mercantilist authoritative model of China has won, right? They're the new great power. And they're not shy about talking about it. You know, folks talk about Brexit in 2016. Is Raheem on here? Raheem? We got the editor of Breitbart London right there. Something was going on in Europe. We could see this United Kingdom Independent Party. Nigel Farage, and I said, you know, that thing looks like a professionally run tea party. We're going to see what's going on over there. We got Raheem and some guys from the Daily Telegraph and set it up. And we kind of hit it every mark going down there. Right? We actually moved our radio show at Sirius XM over there for 2 weeks. And we covered, we have a whole Breitbart vertical, Breitbart London vertical, every day. Right? And when Brexit happened, Nigel Farage went on BBC the next morning and said, if Breitbart London had not been created, there'd been no Brexit. We didn't have a media. We didn't have a platform to tell our story. But here's the point. Here's the point. Is that Brexit was the canary in the mine shaft. Right, by the way, I got to tell you one mainstream media thing. You know, Trump, you know, they all... You guys are rubes and, you know, hobbits and deplorables. This is a whole room full of deplorables. I can feel it. I came down to the Citadel and did the Patriot Day dinner speech and a Trump rally broke out. You know, all these geniuses at the mainstream media on the night of Brexit, Reed remembers this, CNN's on there. Poor Don Lemon couldn't get a guest to even pronounce Brexit. They kept saying Nigel Farage or something, right? Couldn't even pronounce it. All these people know so much. But Governor Bryan down in Mississippi had a rally, and we had Nigel Farage introduce Donald Trump, and there's 10,000 people down there, and they're yelling and screaming. And the next morning, Morning Joe, they go, boy, what a bunch of idiots. They had a guy from England open for Trump, and clearly nobody knew him. I said, this is a standing ovation for Nigel. Heck, we came down to Judge Moore down to Fairhope, Alabama, in a barn with sawdust on it. And every guy in there, bib overalls, big hats, knew Nigel Farage. Why is that? Because the working class people, middle class people in this folks are serious about what this country, where this country's going. And they will go to Breitbart London, and they will read about what's happening. They understand Brexit. They understand that those citizens over there are trying to take their country back, right? And the establishment every day right now is fighting them, right? They're not going to give you, you can vote it, they're not going to give you your country back. You've got to take it back. Are inextricably linked. And here's what links to China. It's exporting Chinese deflation, Chinese excess capacity. That's where the jobs in Midland England went. That's where the labor vote that got Brexit done. That's the upper Midwest. That's Ohio and Pennsylvania and Detroit, Michigan, Wisconsin. We lost Minnesota by 1 point. Minnesota. Iowa. That's what won it, North Carolina. You read the book, Hillbilly Elegies, by J.D. Vance, the Marine Corps officer, right? Magnificent book, you ought to read it. It's the sociological underpinnings of the Trump Revolution. It's told through the story of a family, right? J.D. pointed me to a couple of studies. Those studies from MIT and Harvard. What do they show? A direct correlation between the factories that went to Asia, the jobs they took with them, and the opioid crisis among the workers left behind. Folks, we have a culture and a society that is just about to go into freefall, right? You go through the industrial heartland of this country, it's been gutted, okay? And that's not the second law of thermodynamics. That's not any law of physics that did that. That's human agency. That is us. We allowed that to happen. Right? Those jobs were shipped over to Asia. Those workers were left behind. And a lot of people in Silicon Valley, on Wall Street, in Hollywood, in the imperial capital of America, Washington, D.C., made an awful lot of money. The ascendant economy in this country took off. And the descendant economy got left behind without a fare thee well. And it's that anger. And by the way, they ought to be angry, right? If you're not angry about that, then you're not an American. Bernie Sanders guys are angry about it. And I got to tell you, 16% of Sanders guys voted for us in some of the key districts. Trust me, mainstream media, there's an awful lot of guys on the Sanders side that are going to be coming and voting for us in 2020. The other big event that happened besides President Xi's speech was this study that came out from Brown University the other day from the Watson Center. Highly respected. $5.6 trillion on the global war on terror. Okay? $5.6 trillion since 2001. We have 7,000 dead. You saw the 100 dead tonight. This institution, right? The unbroken train of the cadet corps of the Citadel have done their duty to their country. We're 17 years into this, right? What were that $5.6 trillion done to the best of the United States, right? What were these young men and women? 52,000 casualties. I think the present value, I think the net present value of the VA and the benefits and everything for the wounded, something over $2 trillion. Okay? That's going to be for us to decide what the future is. One of the things Trump ran on. We've got to rethink this. He was mocked and ridiculed. When he first got there, there's a system called the Rules-Based International Liberal Post-War Order. Right? It's a series of trade deals, commercial relationships, capital markets, stretching from the European Union through the Persian Gulf, through the Straits of Malacca, South China Sea, all the way up to the Northwest Pacific, right? Those trade deals, every one of them, $100 billion in Europe, upside down. Golf, totally upside down. All the littoral nations around the South China Sea were upside down. South Korea, $70 billion upside down. China, $400 billion upside down. Japan, upside down. Upside down everywhere, right? And people in the Wall Street Journal, all the geniuses there, oh yeah, trade deficits don't mean anything. Well, go out to Ohio and tell them that, okay? You can sell that on Wall Street. You can sell that to your hedge funds, but you cannot sell that in Macomb County, Michigan. Amen. And here's the rub, and here's what Trump saw. It's underwritten. That's a security guarantee by the United States of America. Your sons and daughters on those ships, those Air Force bases, those Army bases, out there in the Hindu Kush, to the Philippines, to South Korea. That's the United States. That's the United States of America that guarantees that, right? That's what Donald Trump, he asked that question. Why are we underwriting this thing? Why don't we do it? Where is everybody else? Have a little something for the effort, right? You got to sit there and be supplicants to NATO to ask them to pay 2% for their defense? I don't think so. Well, the Germans said, we got to hang on, man. We got a constitutional amendment that says that we have to have a balanced budget. I said, you're kidding me. That's your pitch. This is how great powers collapse, right? It's unlimited commitment, right? From the people that get the least benefit from it. All those factories and jobs left, what are they to do? Have service jobs? And then have the kids, sons and daughters, go in the military? And they'll go in the military, the most patriotic people, most decent people. Washington, D.C., and we're up there, we're not passing, repealing, or replacing Obamacare, and we're not getting the tax bill done. We don't have time for infrastructure. That's something we've got to kick out of the thing that, you know, we haven't built the wall. We haven't, you know, we're not doing the things that we committed to do, right? Because vested interest in the donor class and the consultants and all of that mess, right, thinks they've got a better deal, okay? If you continue to think like that, you're going to have more Virginians, right? This is about winning more. Okay, this is about victory. Mitch McConnell's all big shot, big talk. You know, guys will win, make policy. Hey, Mitch, no offense, dude. Okay? The senator from Wisconsin, Missouri, and North Carolina was brought across the finish line by Donald J. Trump. All that money, those consultants that come after us every day, day in and day out. By the way, I don't mind. Bring it. Okay? You wouldn't even have that job, Mitch, if it wasn't for Donald J. Trump. Yeah. And the deplorables. Okay? And by the way, you're going to see something. I think it'll either come up tonight, or I think it'll come up tomorrow morning on mainstream media. Right? I went through the Trump wars of all the allegations, everything like that. I was there on Billy Bush weekend. When that video came out, right? The next day, we put our video up that night, you know. Next morning, guys, we're sitting up there in the residence, they're going around the thing with, you know, certain politicians and certain people from the RNC, Reince Priebus. I love Reince. He's actually a very good friend. He's a great man, a good partner. And of course, Trump's a percentage player. What's about 20%, 40%, or something like that? Came around to me. What do you think? 100% metaphysical certitude we're going to win. Right? He goes, I don't want to hear that crap. He goes, not today. Don't tell me what it is. I said, 100%. Just stick to the message. I said, it's talk. It's locker room talk. Right? These people want their country back. They think their country's being destroyed. And they know the country's gone. If Hillary Clinton gets in, they take the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court. It's gone forever. These folks down here know, Lieutenant Governor Bryan, Catherine Templeton, they know, politicians here. Campaigns, you gotta have the logistics and the strategy and all that stuff. You gotta get that right. If you don't get that right, you're not gonna get close. But every campaign, I've never worked on a campaign in my life, never been in the campaign office. I can tell you one thing, it's like the military. It comes down to one or two decisions. You make the right decision, leads on to victory. You make the wrong decision, leads on to defeat. That's why they say Hillary Clinton's so smart. I don't think she's so smart. She can't make a decision when the moment counts. That's smart. Right? When the pressure's on, I'm guaranteed she will make the wrong decision. That's why I knew we'd beat her. She's going to make bad decisions. And Donald J. Trump makes smart decisions.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Donald J. Trump said, I'm going to go in the elevator and go out and see the deplorables out on Fifth Avenue. I said, let's have a rally. Let's go to the hill and get 1,000 hammerheads and red hats, right? Get the deplorables there. I did this kind of an insurance policy on a Friday afternoon when the video came out. Arranged for the women who, the sexual predator Bill Clinton, right, had attacked throughout his life and had them come to St. Louis where the debate was. Right? Yeah, because I want to make a big contrast, because mainstream media never did it, never really compared and contrast, right? This was Donald Trump's talk. Locker room talk, which he admitted was locker room talk, right? Versus Bill Clinton's actions. Right? His actions as a sexual predator, right? By the way, President Clinton, lawyers, my name's Stephen K. Bannon. Can you turn me down anytime? I want discovery in that lawsuit, brother. We also brought another victim. It was a rape victim, like an 11-year-old girl at the time. She was a woman in her 60s. Hillary Clinton had defended the rapist, right? And trashed her. And she wanted her day. You know what those folks wanted? They were working class people. And the mainstream media. Trump did is he drove it home day in and day out, 7 rallies, 8 rallies in front of thousands and thousands of people. A guy 70 years old, let's talk about Trump for a second. 70 years old, worth what, $6-7 billion, okay? He had a lovely wife, a great family, a time in life he's buying championship golf courses and putting them in the open road up over in England. He's doing something that his whole life he wanted to do. And he ran for president of the United States. You cannot believe the politics of personal destruction they came after him with. What you saw on the surface is not even close to what we saw. Donald Trump ran for president of the United States, and these people say he's a narcissist, he did it for his ego. He did it. He didn't need to do this. He didn't need to have his family destroyed. He didn't need to have himself destroyed. You know why he did it? Because he loves his country. Is nullify this election. Nullification. Okay? And that's on us.
That's right.
Okay? This is coming down to one very simple thing. Is the 2016 election going to stand or is it not going to stand? are determined is the people in this room. Okay? I left because when I left, I said, the Republican establishment is trying to nullify this election. They have three committees on Capitol Hill. House Intelligence, Senate Intelligence, Senate Judiciary. With open mandates, looking at everything. I have no problem, trust me, of people taking a legitimate look at whether Russia affected the election. No. You guys had a terrible candidate and she lost. Okay? Embrace it. Embrace it. Or I got an idea. Run her again. Hey, who's gonna hit the glass ceiling? Come on. Come on, Hillary. Lord, we would love to take you on again, Hillary. We have to stop this nullification process. I'm not saying fire Bob Mueller. I was the guy that said don't fire Comey, right? Bob Mueller, he's a special counsel. I said that was coming. If he's going to do a thing, yes, he should look at any collusion, look at it thoroughly. Let's put a time frame on it. Let's shut these other committees down or have them do the reports, right? Last time I looked, didn't the Republicans control the House and the Senate? If Hillary Clinton had a one, would Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi have three committees up there investigating her? By the way, Ron, doesn't Adam Schiff, like right now, run the House Intel thing? And Mark Warner, who happens to be running for President of the United States in 2020, runs the Senate Intel? Do you think that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer would allow that to happen? No. You know why? They're serious people. Right? That's one of the many bones I got to pick with Mitch McConnell. Okay, I don't want to hear you happy talk. Right? You set a time limit on it, tell me what time they got, how much money, and then shut it down.
Exactly.
Every day they don't, is shifting out of these leaks. They're telling you what they think. Now, on Billy Bush weekend, when the president waved it off and got focused and went to, I think it was St. Louis. The second debate I thought was his best debate, the town hall. Thought he was pretty dominant, did a great job, right? The women showed up, we almost had a fist fight beforehand because we wanted to put him in the VIP thing, right? Oh my Lord, did the Clintons, Bill Clinton, you should see the look on his face. Yeah, Hillary was rattled too. I got you guys, didn't I? God, that was sweet. But those folks had a right to question Clinton, I thought. We've seen this here the last couple of days. I think there's a mainstream media. I think you're going to see Judge Moore said today that they're finding some collusion going on in the stories about Judge Moore, right? I think you're going to find in the mainstream media either tonight or tomorrow. I think there's going to be some pretty interesting stories about how that information got dropped and who paid for it and who weaponized it, right? Is it just a coincidence that the Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post did the Billy Bush hit, and they did the hit on Judge Moore? Yeah, just a complete random thing in the universe, right? So I think you'll see tomorrow. Look, like with Donald Trump, I said, when I stand with a man, I stand with him, right? And I told Trump that day, you got 100% chance. Just focus on what's important. Until I see additional evidence on Judge Moore, I'm standing with him. That's one of the things we've forgotten in the Republican Party. Too many politicians are intimidated by those guys. Right? They're intimidated by that. If I got a superpower at all, is that I do not give a good damn about what you think. Misogynist bandit. Well, here's what a misogynist is. My oldest daughter is a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point, and she served in the like the events we saw up there, okay? Don't tell me about misogyny. Don't tell me about how to raise women, okay? President Trump's had a, I think he's had a great run and a tough run. But it's, we have to have his back. The tough stuff hadn't even started. You think this tax bill, look, it's like the biggest lift the House and the Senate ever did to cut our taxes, right? If that's the biggest lift you got to do, guys, you know, when you couldn't repeal and replace Obamacare, somebody's got to get focused. Mitch McConnell said some article the other day said, how effective is Bannon? You look at all this great stuff Mitch McConnell's doing. They're working 6 days a week. They're going to work over Thanksgiving. They passed the budget. They got this tax thing out there. Note to self, it all started when we started getting Mitch's grill. That's the only thing they understand. The only thing they understand is the hammer. This country's in a tough fix. Go back and read Cheese. Read all 68 pages. Read all 68 pages and think about it. Right? Think about what those 10-year-olds, you go home tonight, either your kids or your grandkids, 40 years from now, when they're having the Patriots Day dinner, what this country's going to be. And I'm a big believer in the cycles of history theory called turnings. We're in the great fourth turning in American history. We had this revolution, the Civil War, the Great Depression of World War II. They happen about every 80 to 100 years. We're in the great fourth turning right now. We come through this turning, we're going to be one thing or the other. We're either going to be the country that was bequeathed to us, or we're going to be something radically different. And if you want to see how radically different we're going to be, I'm from Virginia. Don't look at the Confederate monuments. Go up to New York City. Look at what they're throwing on Columbus. Look what they're throwing on Teddy Roosevelt. Right? That's what you're going to have. And worse. A lot worse. And I don't mind those protesters out there. They got every right to do it. They got every right to work. By the way, in Virginia, they outworked us. Okay? So more credit to them. They were better organized, better focused, and they were angry. It's time for us to get angry again. November 8th is just one day. You're going to have to work every day on this. And it's not Trump, and it's not Laura Ingraham, it's not Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, Catherine Templeton, Lieutenant Governor Bryan, no. Steve Bannon, It's you. If we get through this, it's because of you. The hobbits and the deplorables. It's on your shoulders. Right? You know, if you gave me the choice between governed by the first 100 folks that came in here tonight, or the top 100 partners at Goldman Sachs, I'd pick the 100 folks, first 100 folks. Yeah. You know what? You get more decency, more grit, more determination, and a better understanding of people. But in this fourth turning, this goes back, I didn't know we were going to have this film tonight, it's very moving, right? But what this institution stands for. Remember, tomorrow is what, the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month. The guns went silent. And they thought they were going to go silent forever. What it was the end of the opening act in the bloodiest century in mankind's history. You got to understand something, folks. They look back on that century 500 years from now, they're going to think it was a dark age. The barbarity, the inhumanity. What was it, 280 million people killed, we think? Right? Starvation, death chambers. I mean, the most horrific thing in mankind, right after Congressman, right after Albert Einstein, the theory of relativity, all the great scientific advances. What it leads to tear ourselves apart and try to destroy ourselves. And a century that is going to go down incalculable horrors. In this century, how have we started it off? And what lays before us? You know, Edmund Burke, the great conservative philosopher, had this thing called Burke's Compact, that we owe as much to those that came before as we do to future generations. We're just here in a period of time. Human agency. Divine providence puts you here for a reason. I want you to think about that. Think about those kids tonight, right? Young men and women. What would they say about us? There was the hurricane. They had a study that came out a couple of weeks ago. I think it was one in Houston. 50% of the households in this country can't put their hands returns of $400 in cash for an emergency. You think the Revolution, Civil War, World War II, these kids, think they died for that? That's a question we got to ask ourselves. That's the standard we have to hold ourselves to. All this nonsense in Washington's got to stop. Yeah. Is it a man? You're too angry. You're angry all the time. You're damn right I'm angry. Yeah. This has got to stop. And Mitch McConnell's got to go. Thank you very much. Yeah.